and welcome to Crippled System, episode 313. My name is Andy.
My name is Nathan.
And I'm Dave.
Hey.
313 is a palindrome.
It's
also prime.
Yep. Well, I don't care about prime numbers anymore.
No.
Why not? Yeah.
They get more rare as the numbers get higher, so it's more interesting than it has been in the past, statistically speaking, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I watched an interesting video recently that was the shorthand for how to tell if a number is divisible by each of the integers.
Mm-hmm.
Or not integers.
Primes.
No, single-digit number. Is that integer? No, any whole. Yeah, that's
whatever. Any number is an integer.
Yeah, what's the single-digit numbers called? There's a term for those.
Single-digit numbers.
I thought they had a term.
This is not the math
digit,
cast.
Digit.
Digit.
Is it a digit?
I got
whatever.
I got five,
point
I
is,
got,
no, because anything's digit. Digits, whatever. Screw you. The point is, I knew about, like, you know, two's obvious, right? And like mm-hmm. five and whatnot. And three, we all know three, and nine's very similar to three. But I didn't know that there was one for like seven and stuff like that. And so it was interesting to see how those work. And some of them were really super weird. That's all. It's a fun math video.
Yep. Number theory.
Recreational math is great.
Yep. Number theory. That was one of the primary number theorists of the 20th century had once said that number theory was the perfect form of math because you could pursue it because it had no actual relevance to anything. But we got the motherfucker because cryptography is based almost entirely on number theory. So we took his pure unmotivated pursuit of knowledge for the sake of knowledge, and we fucking put dollar signs on it because that's what we fucking do.
Take that. Jerk.
Yeah. What? So, announcements. What? Announcements.
Everything is closed. Stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah. God damn, listen to science. Jesus. That's my announcement. Is just listen to science. Put on a mask. Social distance.
Stay at home. Wear a fucking mask. It is not difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, considering just about every single state that is on the borderline of reopening have said, like, oh, shit, we got to close again. I mean, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, they are digits. I just found the definition online of a numeral versus a number versus a digit. And 0 through 9 are digits. Take that.
Okay.
Fist shake. There's announcements. Although I guess they're also recommendations. There's no like event announcements, but there's a shitload of this week was a good week if you like things.
Mm-hmm.
But that can fall under recommendations.
Somehow Warfare Weekend is planning to run in November.
Physically?
God bless their optimism.
Yeah. Somehow. Yeah. Well, hope the best. Yeah, hope you guys can do it. I don't think that's going to be possible considering most of other big events like BlizzCon, and you know Bobby Kotick loves his money. BlizzCon is canceled already, so random
poor guy
war game event that's happening in the middle of the country. I don't think that's going to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So speaking of accommodations for shutdown, we got something really stupid out of the customs enforcement that they said that they were going to initiate deportation procedures against students, against foreign students that were taking online classes. Or that were taking classes that were now entirely online. Sure. Unfortunately, it was either yesterday or today. Some sane judge said, "Hold on a second, you can't fucking do that." But I thought this was funny because I told my wife that it's like, yeah, it's like this sounds like a problem, but realistically, it's not going to do anything because if there's anything you can trust academics to do, is to make something work on paper. I said this means that every university is suddenly going to have a class that every student has to take that is required to be face-to-face, required to be face-to-face instruction, except they're officially not going to take attendance for it. Every university will say you have to show up for this class, but we're not going to count if you're there or not.
Sure.
And so she's in an online program at Texas A&M, and forwarded me an email where they basically had it set up. That's like, yeah, we're setting up lecture halls for all of these huge classes that now every student is going to have to take, but we're not actually going to count if you're there or not.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, well, how are we going to spread our COVID if we don't ship those kids back home? You know, like.
Well, I mean that's the other thing about how many of these foreign students are going to be allowed to go home from America, where exactly. the rest of the world is shutting the doors to us because apparently we are run by servants of Nurgle.
Ye of little faith, this is how we get Mexico to pay for that wall.
I've heard that theory a lot of times. Yeah. Not just from
you didn't
either.
Think they'd be willing to pay for it. Now yeah. They might.
Yeah, I mean it's sad when you see it. Like even restricted travel within the states too. Like I think if there's a Wisconsinite that travels over to like New York, they have to be placed in quarantine for 14 days. It's just oh my god, we're number one, yay!
You know, if 90% of Americans would wore masks for 6 weeks when this started, it would have already been done.
Well, yeah, and
yeah,
actually,
but my freedoms.
Yeah, my freedoms. Yeah.
David, my freedoms.
My freedoms.
My freedoms.
Yeah.
Let me say I my have freedoms. I have rage. I have rage over everything that's going on.
Yeah. No, I mean it's expensive. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Jenny McCarthy.
Oh yeah, because in another six to 12 months we're going to have a vaccine, and then we have to go through this shit all over again with the anti-vaxxers.
Yeah. So in War Machine,
well, thanks for listening. Bye.
In War Machine Hordes news and Riot Quest news, Privateer had their big thingy. Their 20-year anniversary
War Machine Hordes. What was the other kind of news?
Riot Quest. Oh, I didn't say it right. Riot Quest news.
Riot Quest.
Are you Marlon Brando in it?
That video is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Oh God, I love you, Hungerford, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the videos for Riot Quest this round was much better round. But no, they had their what's that thing they called?
Kickstarter?
No, not Kickstarter. What is the speech?
The video. Yeah. The hello, we're the people.
State of the nation.
State of play.
Somebody help us. Yeah, obviously nobody's helping us here. We're not streaming out.
Primecast.
It's not Primecast.
Travis. Keynote. They had a keynote.
Keynote! Thank you!
Keynote cops. Jesus. The keynote cops. They all fall down.
Keystone cops. That's like the best part of
Keystone
the Pirates.
Keystone Light?
No, Keystone cops. That was like the best part of the best part of Pirates of Penzance.
They're on the wrong side of the country for that.
But they had the keynote that went into like some new Riot Quest stuff and some more Riot Quest stuff and some more like three factions of War Machine and Hordes.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about some new Trollblood stuff coming out, CID for Legion that's coming out soon with some pretty cool looking models. Another caster I have to buy. Yeah.
Oh, multiple, isn't there? Oh, well, yeah. There's a new Crucible Guard caster coming out.
Yeah. That's Riot Quest, which I'll still end up buying anyway. What are you pointing
at? I'm staring at the Google Maps for the route from Plain to Nashville, Tennessee, and
Nobody knows what that is yet. Don't tell them because, you know, the podcast will be out and they might pick it up before you.
They won't know how to contact the guy. Oh, sweet Jesus. After this podcast, I'm going to go beg Raylene.
for a road trip? Is that... You're going to have to get a truck, though. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, so listen, for listeners of the podcast, Nathan is about to drive 9.5 hours through nothing.
Excuse you. I'm going to drive 19 hours because I have to drive back.
Yeah. You can just drop it off at my place, or maybe even less back. Or more time back.
I mean, I still have to get back.
That's true, too. I've got a bed in the basement now, so you can stay here. And internet connection in the basement. So, and it's cooler.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I promise less chains.
You know, the flight there is only an hour and a half. From $103? Oh, my Lord, why wouldn't I just fly there and drive back?
Because getting into a plane with COVID is probably like one of the worst things in the world. That's an hour and a half of a recycled atmosphere. You can fly
anywhere really cheap right now.
Yeah. Yeah, holy shit.
Yeah. Unfortunately, one of my good friends moved to Arizona during this, and he took a flight down to Arizona. So I'm surprised he's not sick already. Because that place is not doing well either.
No.
Pretty much all of the states are not doing well, besides like Montana. Which nobody lives there anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if they're plenty of these states that humans are statistical anomalies in, and some of them are doing okay.
Yep. So keynote. I mean, they had made a couple of really cool announcements. There's a whole new Iron Kingdoms for 5th Ed, for D&D 5th Edition. It's compatible with that, so. I'm excited for that, but at the same time, they did come out with some really awesome source books, like a couple of years ago, that are kind of null and void, but at least they could be used for background information for the world.
Yep.
I'm excited that Matt Goetz is back on board with Privateer because he is an awesome dude. He's the one who basically did pretty much their whole role playing session or stuff for a long time. You sound like you were going to say something, Nathan.
Well, no, I mean, nothing important. I was going to say that, like, the current version of the IKRPG is fun and interesting and crunchy, but it does kind of suffer from something that a lot of other games I like suffer from, which is they can get a little too crunchy, mm-hmm. especially when you get combat that down and, you know, into the details. Like, one of my favorite RPGs when I was younger was Deadlands. And Deadlands was great, except, like, you tracked wounds on individual body parts separately. So not only did you have to, like, when you rolled to hit, you would then roll to see where you hit. Then you'd have to compare armor to that specific location. Yeah. Then if you did damage, you had to keep track, you know, well, they have 3 wounds on their left arm and 2 wounds on their right arm. And it's just an absolute, like, it's interesting and cool. But once you have combat with more than, like, 3 NPCs, a simple gunfight took 2 fucking hours, and there's a trade-off there. So the streamline of something, as dumb as hit points are, like, mm-hmm. they're absolutely stupid, right? Like, a first-level wizard, a house cat, can kill them by scratching them. A 10th-level fighter, you shoot them in the face with a cannon, and it doesn't even stun them, right? Yeah. It's stupid, but on the other hand, fuck it, you're playing pretend, and it's quicker and easier.
God, I want to DM a game where we have like a level 1 wizard. I want him to be killed by a house cat now.
It is if you roll for your starting hit point. I don't know if it's still true in 5.
I think 5 you get max. But in AD&D,
I think you get max. But in AD&D, when you rolled, so you'd roll a d4, so you might have 1 hit point as low as from 1 to 4, and then a cat was like 1d4 minus 1 or something for their scratch. So there was a better than 50% chance that you would die from being scratched by a cat.
Well, yeah, that's why, I mean, that's why wizards have long beards, because shaving accidents have a fatality rate of about 50%.
Make your dexterity check every time.
Fucking wizards.
So, I mean, that's cool. I mean, they announced like a whole new Kickstarter for like kind of like season 2 for Riot Quest. That looks interesting. Looks like everything's the playmats taking place in, like, I think it's Vlad's throne room, or not Vlad's throne room, but the Kador throne room.
Mm-hmm.
because this is all taking place after the apocalypse, in its own world. It is cool to learn, though, that at least in the D&D Iron Kingdoms, that it's all taking place after the events of the Henshold Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
After the kind of the big retelling of just everybody dying in dramatic fashion. But no Karchev 2 yet. God damn it.
Karchu. Speaking of everybody dying and the Pocky clips. Mm-hmm. So I rewatched Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome last week.
It's not a good film.
It's fucking amazing. No. Fuck all the haters. So good. It's one of only two Mad Max films worth watching anymore.
There's three Mad Max films worth watching. I'm just saying
there are three good Mad Max films.
Yes.
One of which there's no reason to ever watch again.
There's four
Mad Max films.
Yep.
Three of which are good.
Yep.
And then of the three good ones, one of them is completely superfluous because the other really good one is just a strictly better version of it. I love Road Warrior.
Are you saying the Road Warrior?
I will never watch Road Warrior instead of Fury Road. Why would I ever watch Road Warrior instead of Fury Road?
It's different. It is different. It is different. There's a whole smuggling aspect. I mean,
and the wives being smuggled in the. I mean, obviously they're not one for one, note for note the same, but they're so similar that I doubt I'm ever going to be like, I'll go on YouTube and just watch Lord Humongous's speech.
Sure.
And then I'll go watch Fury Road.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, the action sequence.
And even that's not as good as or Morton Joe's first speech when he's, you know, doing the water and, you know, oh.
I've always described Fury Road, like probably most people have, that it's. That think of the car chase sequence that's in Mad or Road Warrior and then make it the whole film.
Yeah.
That, I mean, but there are aspects of that car chase sequence that's in Road Warrior that I really like as much as I like Fury Road.
But even that aside,
sure.
Thunderdome is great. It is great. Angry Anderson, great as Ironbar. Ironbar, I think, is my favorite Mad Max character. I fucking love Ironbar, and Angry Anderson does a great job as him. I don't get all the hate for the kids. They're fine. They're handled well. There's not too much of them. The pacing's really good. The villain is great. I love it start to finish. It's so good.
I'm so surprised that Tina Turner was not in many other films after that. Did she just skip typecast that much, or does she just not want to do it anymore?
I don't know. Let me see. I thought she was in a decent amount of stuff, but maybe not.
Well, nothing like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, though.
Well, sure. I mean,
but yeah, she was good in the film. I mean, I don't hate that much. I don't think it's really that great. I do find
Lord.
It kind of.
She's in. Well, I guess this TV series itself. I'd have to find stuff where she isn't self. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. I mean. I do find it interesting that like one of the lost kids looks like a war boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Screw loose. Screw loose. Yeah.
Screw loose.
He looks just like a war boy. Like they just.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's the white paint, the whole death aspect thing. Yeah. It's god. And it's the start of, I mean, he brought it back for Rictus, but apparently George Miller just likes giant dudes with the mind of a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because that's Blaster, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's the second best Mad Max film.
I'd still go Fury Road, then Road Warrior. And then
beyond. You put a massive gap is the issue. Is you're talking like AAC at best. And I'm talking like A+, AA-.
I would say Beyond Thunderdome is at least a B minus. I'm not gonna give it a B plus, like Trek into Darkness.
Oh, that movie was so
solid
bad.
Solid B plus movie.
So bad.
I still haven't even seen the new Star Trek either. The
how new?
Like the third of the new films or the TV series?
I still haven't seen it.
The third of the new films was better than the second of the new films.
I've only seen the first of the new films. I mean, I thought the first one was good. It was just a little more actiony than you're expecting from Star Trek. And then I saw the reviews of the second one. I'm like, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, the second one was raw terrible. The third one brings it back. They kind of learn from their mistakes. It's also a great moment because they play the Beastie Boys again, like during a climactic battle sequence. Like somebody's playing the Beastie Boys on one of the starships, and then Bones McDread is just like, who's playing classical music? And I liked somebody finally referencing that. Because, like, why? I just wanted, like, Picard sitting in his ready room listening to, like, Pantera. Or you know, something like that. And just like, oh, I just love classical music.
Or it'd be like, yeah.
It'd be this Cannibal Corpse.
Man, it would be really cool if we had audio recordings of, like, Beethoven's, like, as it was performed back. Was it 1600s?
Yeah.
1700s?
Well, I mean, when you think of it, it gets even worse than that. Like, we have no idea what Mongolian, you know, nursery rhymes were.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know the Roman national anthem, right? Like, because written notation wasn't a thing. And so you just don't get to know forever.
Yes, standardized written notation. We have been able to reconstruct some like ancient Greek music because some of the Greek philosophers wrote about music theory.
Yeah,
and like, so
aboriginal version of happy birthday, like you're just fucking never just gone forever.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even songs that are recorded today. One of the things I love musicology and looking at like the history of old songs, and even some of the songs that are pop that are well known today and how far back they go. Like I think one of my favorites is the House of the Rising Sun.
But Animal, is it the Animals?
The Animals did the most popular version of it. They actually, the Animals version was actually written by Dylan, and I mean it's an older song, but Dylan's lyrics were the direct predecessor of the Animals version. But the song itself, I mean, it starts off. There is a house in New Orleans that's called the Rising Sun. The song is actually older than the city of New Orleans. That I mean, there was a chain back to an old English broadsheet ballad that was somewhat different. But I mean, there was always the house of iniquity involved in it. But it over time got moved to New Orleans. But the song itself is older than that. Or one of my other favorite songs for this is the song Ico Ico, which Dr. John had the most famous version of it. And it's an old song that's associated with Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And there is broad agreement on what the chorus of the song is and what the syllables in the chorus is. But there is substantial disagreement amongst musicologists, not only what the chorus means, but what language the chorus is in.
So going back to a previous topic of conversation, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome was only Tina Turner's third film role.
What was her first?
And she was in
made for TV movies or something.
No, she was in Tommy as the Acid Queen.
She was already famous at that point.
Correct. Well, yeah, so I'm just looking famous. At things More where so she didn't singing. Play. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm just looking at things where she didn't play herself, right? So
what is Tommy?
The Who's rock opera about the deaf, dumb, and blind pinball.
Yep.
One of the people the parents go to try to cure Tommy is the Acid Queen, Tina Turner played her in the film version. So you had Tommy, Acid Queen, and then very similarly, 3 years later, she was in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Then she was in a TV series for one episode. And then a decade later... my malt. And then a decade later, she was in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and then nothing until, let me find it here, 1993, when she played a mayor in what movie, Andy?
1993.
Mayor Tina Turner. I mean, she just played the mayor.
So it's got to be something I probably know,
mm-hmm.
at least. The Stupids.
Mm-mm.
No, I'm out.
It has Charles Dance in it.
Oh, she was in Last Action Hero then.
Last Action Hero, Tina Turner as the mayor. And then that's it. She was on an episode of Ally McBeal in 2000. Yeah. Like, that's it. Just four film roles and a couple guest starring things.
I thought she's pretty solid in there. I'm kind of surprised that she hasn't, maybe just her schedule or, you know, I didn't want it.
I'm surprised she didn't do more. God, that was
a horrible joke. Sorry. I'm sure.
Well, no, better joke. So edgy is, fuck, I can't remember which newspaper it was. When Ike Turner died,
mm-hmm.
their headline, referring strictly to the chronology of it,
mm-hmm.
was Ike Turner beats Tina to death.
Yeah,
that was their headline. Ike Turner beats Tina to death.
That must have been one hell of a session that they had to decide that was going to be the headline. Man, I want to have the charisma that person had that suggested that that's how they should do it.
It was the New York Post is who it was.
Oh my God, it's even big, a big paper.
Yeah, not a respectable paper though.
No, but it was a big paper. That's yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my Lord.
Jeez. What were you talking about then before then? We were talking about how good
Ico.
Okay.
Yep.
Hey,
that
no.
Movie's so dumb.
Hey no.
Ico. Yeah.
What oh, no, we just got demonetized. What about Ico Onai?
Yeah, we're just talking about that there is.
It's older than human history.
It's a very old song, and there is debate. There is debate by historians as to what language the chorus of the song is in. That I've seen. I've seen explanations of what the chorus means based on assumptions that it was derived from like two different languages.
So it's like people trying to decipher what "Wooly Bully" is.
Yeah,
because that song makes no sense. As well, even the singer after
Louie.
I got them both mixed up. But yeah, Louie. Yeah, that's what I meant. Not Wooly Bully.
Well, no, I mean Louie has does actually have coherent lyrics. If you look at, if you look at the lyrics and then try to knowing what the lyrics are, listening to the song, it kind of makes sense. But it's you have like zero chance of understanding what the lyrics are supposed to be without knowing them ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Louie is also fantastic because if you listen in the original recording of it, they were in the dude's garage and you can hear the garage door shutting in one part of it, mm-hmm. because they just like had only enough time to do one cut of it.
It's like whenever Rock the Casbah comes on the radio, I like to guess whether it's the version where you can hear the alarm on its Casio watch go off or not. Because there's two different recordings, and yeah. It's just a crapshoot which one the radio uses that you're listening to.
I think God of Thunder also had recording issues, too, where you could hear children using walkie-talkies in the background. God of Thunder from
you know
Kiss.
The original Roller Coaster of Love. You could hear a lady dying. It's true. My cousin's uncle's nephew's roommate's brother was in the studio at the time
as the murder happened.
That was so dumb. Well, because what it was, and it's so dumb. So, God, I can't even. Now my brain's just going to Red Hot Chili Peppers because they did the more recent cover.
Yeah,
but the original Roller Coaster of Love, the album that it was on, had like a nude woman who was like covered in like dripping honey.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the rumor was that like stuck to her. And when they pulled it off, it just ripped her skin off and she died.
Oh, that's like
from the photo shoot. And then the rumor went beyond that to say that the scream that you can hear like in the background of the beginning of that song, which is just like the bassist being all excited that the song's starting or something, right? But they say that scream is her screaming as she dies from that. As if they did the photo shoot in the recording studio yeah. and then just kept her. Like, none of this makes sense. But yeah, no, I heard it's true. What is true is you can hear Sting sit on a piano at the beginning of, what is it, Roxanne, I think.
Huh. So I didn't realize. I thought the Roller Coaster of Love, I thought that was a Stevie Wonder.
No, you're thinking of the other Red Hot Chili Peppers song, the Higher Ground.
Higher Ground is what I'm thinking of. Yep. Okay. That's a pretty nice looking cover. That's like an urban legend too. Isn't the gal that was all painted up in Goldfinger died from the paint?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is so dumb because, like, why would they keep it in the movie? Like, also, humans don't work that way. You don't breathe through your skin. That's not what pores are for.
Yeah.
I could see something with, speaking of, because we were talking about that on Mythbusters, and I just reminded myself about Grant Imahara that passed away yesterday.
Yep, suddenly. Jeff's father.
Yeah, I was saddened that the article did not say that he was the creator of Jeff Peterson, the body, but it was mentioned in the article I saw that he was the creator of Jeff Peterson. Awesome robot sidekick of Craig Ferguson on a show that needs to be rebooted. That needs to come back.
It ain't coming back because they gave him enough money that he doesn't need to come back.
Yeah, I know. I miss him so much.
Yeah.
This day and age.
He should have come when I saw him live when he was in Madison.
Well, I've seen him twice now live, though.
David, I'll pay you $100 to go to Nashville for me.
No.
Ah, damn it. You can keep one of the doors. We can put chains on them, and it'll be like those best friend half hearts.
Did you haven't even talked to Raylene yet to see if he can even do that yet, have you?
Listen, she ain't the boss of me. If she decides I'm not going to go, I will agree of my own volition.
You're not going to risk your hand delivered Culver's malts.
Oh, that was a stepdaughter.
That was her kid.
Yeah. So that wasn't her.
They never put enough malt powder in there. I think it's just because I want it to be gritty. Like, I want you to take malt powder and moisten it with malt.
So it's like, you know, like the ice sand? Cream and milk.
Yes, I want moistened like sand.
An old style McDonald's milkshake
needs to be crunchy from the malt powder. Oh well, that's okay. That's okay.
Do we have any other announcements?
No. We talked about the new pseudo. What is it? The boarding party? We talked about that last week. For anyone who's interested in that.
Yep. Good luck.
Yeah. Nope. Nothing else.
No.
Yeah. Zappity.
Yeah, I guess we're on to Zappity Grumbles then.
Yeah, and then I have like four recommendations, so that'll take up some time.
Well, this is probably going to handle for one of the recommendations is, are you hyped for Peace Talks?
Peace Talks?
Yeah. The new...
I'm chewing an onion ring.
Oh, I couldn't actually see
Peace Talks.
Peace Talks, the new book.
Dresden Files, Dresden the newest Files. Dresden Files book came out today. Dresden Files books are very, very good. The first two are merely okay, and then they get amazing. Yeah, I'm excited about Peace Talks. The only issue is that it's been an abnormally long gap since the previous Dresden Files book, and so I need to like read a quick synopsis to make sure I'm all caught up to speed. I know I remember like 95% of everything that was happening, but that 5% is going to come back to bite me. Not as much as when Jim made me miss a book, and that was very confusing when I missed an entire book. Like only 5 books into the series, I missed a book. So that was a huge percentage of the storyline.
You mean Jim as an Arjum?
Or yeah, because he owned the series, and so he was loaning me the books one at a time. And okay. as he was loaning me the books, like, here's the next one, and then I'd return it, and then he'd say, here's the next one, and I'd return it, and he'd say, here's the next one, and he skipped one. And the one he skipped was very, very, very important, because, like, a major character is introduced slash reintroduced from Harry's past, but I missed that book. And so then, like, three more books later, when that person comes by again, and Harry's like, hey, sup? I'm like, what? Like, this should be a big deal. Like, this is the biggest deal ever. And he's just like, hey, how's it going?
Well, that goes to show the testament of those books, though, that you don't, I mean, they're all kind of self-contained stories. They do lead into each other, but it's kind of like they're very episodic and that you can just pick up into, like, right away. So,
And they have a great birthday party in book three.
I've never read them.
They're so good. But yes, I am excited because the series is very good. Like I said, the first two are merely okay. They're a little cliche-y. But then book three, he pivots and uses those. He subverts the cliches that were built to make the series more interesting because of those roots.
You could probably look forward to another Dresden cast from us. Or at least we could probably do something with Brian and Jeremy and Katie and you.
Well, he's making up for lost time because there's another Dresden book coming out like in September.
Yeah.
Like the next one is only like 3 months away from now. Yep. He's making up for lost time.
Yep. I'll talk to the old crew of those and see if they'd be interested.
How can you not love a book series where the lead character is a wizard who in one of the books battles an army of zombies by riding on the back of Sue the T-Rex from the Field Museum, who's been reanimated by a one-man band polka player? I mean, that's just amazing.
Is it a visual that you got to see on the TV show, the short-lived TV show?
That was not on the TV show. I do have a T-shirt with that on it.
I was going to say that would have been like the first thing that I would have, you know, sent to the production team to do is let's make that sequence and then show that to the network.
And what makes it great, like, you could just throw that into anything, right? Like, he could just be like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Like, and just saying it makes it sound like that just sounds like nonsense. But within the book, it makes sense, right? It's all built up in a way that you're like, this is a logical point for the story to have reached. And that's what makes him so good, is that a wizard riding on the back of Sue the skeleton, who's being powered by a one-man band polka player, was the logical conclusion of what was leading up to it, rather than just monkey cheese silliness.
I just have the visual of the one-man band polka player with, like, the tuba and then, like, the bass drum attached to his back with his heels with a rope attached, so he's like, dum, dum.
That is legit what it is. Like, it's not just one guy. He's full on with, like, the cymbals on the knees riding on the back of a reanimated skeletal T-Rex.
Is that what's powering him?
Yes.
That's what's powering the T-Rex to actually animate? So it's like...
Correct.
So it's very similar to Weekend at Bernie's 2.
That's exactly... Yeah, it actually is, Andy. It's exactly what it is, because in voodoo zombie lore, you reanimate them in part, depending on which lore you're going with, either entirely or just in part, with drums. Like, the drums are a necessary part of it.
Be like the heart.
Like, you need that musical rhythm. Yeah, exactly. And so you would have, like, the drums, and you'd play it, and it would animate the corpse. And so in this book, drums to animate the dead is a big aspect. And the only dead that Harry can get to is Sue. And the only drums he has access to is his buddy with a one-man polka band. And so that's what he's got to do. Start smacking your knees together. We need that drum beat to animate the skeleton so I can go save the day. Because, again, it sounds silly, but that is logic. They set up the drums. They set up the skeleton. They set it all up so it leads there, and that's good writing.
That reminds me, I need to somehow get Weekend at Bernie's 2, because I do not own that movie.
Need is a strong word.
It's just as good as the first one, because it is the first one with
yeah, music. I was going to say, how strong of a claim is that, actually, that it's as good as the first one?
Because the bigger thing is claiming that it is the first one, because it's entirely different, because the first one had no magic. they were just doing like puppeteering. The second one, they legit, that's like The Boy and The Boy 2 Brahms is what that's more like.
To be honest with you, I would actually really would like a sequel, like a modern day sequel to Weekend at Bernie's, to be like a Weekend at Bernie's 3. You know, we're getting Bill and Ted 3. We should get a Weekend at Bernie's 3.
Sure, but keep the timeline the same so Bernie is fully like 30 years decomposed. And they just have to hide it with just a really baggy tracksuit.
They gotta go and dig him up. And I think the last you saw of him, he was just wandering around the bottom of the ocean. Was anyone like holding his chest with the arrow through his head? Fucking. Oh, that movie's so good.
Is it better than Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome?
Weekend at Bernie's 2? Yes.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Also, I forgot how much of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome is beyond Thunderdome. The climactic fight scene with Blaster is less than a third of the way into the film. Like, that shit gets done fast.
Yeah. It changes gears fairly quickly in there. It kind of goes from, what do you expect to be, you know, all barter town, to let's go hang with the kids in the wilderness.
But it's not. He's only in the wilderness for like 10 minutes, and then he comes back, and then you get a chase scene just as good as the one in Road Warrior. That final chase scene with all the Bartertown people, with Iron Bar.
The cow car needed more screen time, in my opinion.
I was pointing that out to Raylene as we were watching that. It's like, you need to watch, babe, because coming up is my actual dream car. Like, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to drive to work in that cow car. And I was like, and I don't have to dress like the cowboy. And she's like, can you? I said, yes, but it's technically optional. God, fucking cow car. That thing's great. I wonder if it's street legal.
Man, I would love
to. Is there anything against having a car with, instead of a metal body, it's just fabric? Can you have a leather car?
I mean, realistically, you get the title over an old VW Beetle, and you whatever the fuck you want to it, and it's just a question of how much you can get away with it without getting pulled over.
Right, and so I'm wondering, even if you get pulled over, like there are rules and regulations, right? Like I can't just have like 10-foot spikes sticking out every side of the car, right? Because that's not safe for people around me. And there's got to be minimum, like I have to have seatbelts. That's a requirement. But are crumple zones a requirement? Or if I'm willing to just die if I ever rear-ended somebody, is that my choice? Right? And so I don't know, like, do I need a windshield? Are windshields required?
I mean, there's some cars some older cars that don't meet the safety requirements. They're street legal. Like some of the old 40s and 50s cars.
Yeah, but I think that even them, like, you have to modify them to put seatbelts and stuff in if you want to drive them, I thought.
True, but it just looks like a roadster, the old cow car, though. I think that's street legal. I think you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is the different. There's a distinction between what you can legally drive and what you can legally sell.
Yeah, I don't think you can drive an Immortan Joe car, the double decker. I don't even know what it was called.
You don't think double horse is legal, or giga horse rather?
That was the name of Immortan Joe's double decker car.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm not sure that is street legal. And actually,
that's Giga Horse's. I'm trying to remember what Rictus's horse was. But yeah, the double deckers. Can you just drive? If I had like Gravedigger, can you just drive that down the road?
I don't think you can because it's a too wide of a vehicle.
Can you drive it then if you have somebody driving in front of you with the wide load sign and a flashing amber light?
I think you'd also run into clearance issues too around like bridges and stuff like that.
Monster trucks are not street legal due to the height of the bumper and headlights.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that might make a Morton Joe's vehicle not street legal. because
he's got low headlights on that thing, though.
It's still
like if you look at
up there, though,
the bumper and the scoops are no higher than like any random pickup truck. The seat is 6 feet above the bumper.
Yeah,
the bumper is way down there.
I think you would run into clearance issues there too.
Well, sure. Like, yeah, you don't want to go under the 8'10" bridge. That website's great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Zappity.
From 11'8" rather. 11'8", that's what it is. The can opener is what they've nicknamed that bridge.
Yes, yep. I didn't read this beforehand, so I'm going to just say it. Set aside the most recent J.K. Rowling debacle, what book series, comic book, TV I will show, not say- Sanskrit tablet, et cetera, that you enjoyed in your youth that has either aged most poorly or has been most thoroughly ruined by learning more about the author. In the same vein, what inexplicably beloved media property have you always considered to be trash fire and why?
Well, I mean, when I was a teenager, I liked Ender's Game. And then I read a nonfiction essay by Orson Scott Card. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Malt. Yeah, I can in general separate author from work. I can't do it with Rowling because she's too embedded in it. Like Lucas, you couldn't do it with until Disney gave him infinite money to go away. Like, so now Star Wars and Lucas have nothing to do with each other. But Rowling is Harry Potter, and there's no separating them. You just can't. And she's the only instance I have where that's true. I do struggle some with Polanski. Like, I haven't rewatched Chinatown. Yeah. I haven't rewatched Chinatown recently and whatnot, just because he's so disgusting to me that I just can't. But that's not like a childhood thing. Like, nothing's been as bad as Harry Potter to me.
Yeah. The thing is, I you know, I wasn't...
Oh, actually, Earthworm Jim and anything else by Doug Tennaple.
What's wrong with Earthworm Jim? Oh, God,
what happened to Doug Tennaple?
Doug Tennaple is full-on, you know, alt-right as far as, like, incels and simping and you know, all that shit. Oh. He is terrible about that. Oh. Homophobic, misogynistic, you know, if you ain't a straight white male, you're garbage. Yeah, Doug Tennaple has a lot of real, real bad views along that. Unapologetic use of the F-bomb, homophobic slur, as opposed to just saying fuck. Yeah, real bad. And so there's not only Earthworm Jim, but there's other stuff that he was involved with that now I'm just like, yep, goodbye.
Oh, that,
yeah, Tennaple's bad.
You just ruined part of my childhood.
Sorry.
Well, Earthworm Jim is not really my childhood, but it's definitely a cartoon I remember a lot. Mm-hmm. Oh, that the
games
sucks.
Were good.
Yeah, the games were awesome.
The cartoon is theme really good. Yeah. No, the cartoon, The Sword of Power, is probably one of my favorite episodes ever in Earthworm Jim history. Oh, that sucks.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Then what's something that I always thought was a trash fire? I don't know.
You know what? I had a good example recently, like something that I was just going to like post, you know, like this is actually overrated garbage, change my mind. And now I can't remember what it was. Not that have enough random things I've said that about in the past.
Tim DePell was also responsible for The Neverhood, which was one of my favorite games too.
Yep.
Shit. And Skull Monkeys, which,
all that Neverhood stuff is all him. Yep.
Yeah.
Neverhood soundtrack was great. The game itself is amazing. Yeah, Skull Monkeys was one of one of my favorite games I had on the PS1. Hmm. Yeah, Tennaple sucked. I mean, he sucks, and finding out that he sucked.
Yeah, well,
he did cover art for an album called Bible Land by a Christian alternative rock singer. Maybe we should have known.
So speaking of, I guess I'm going to bring up whatever. Speaking of movies I rewatched last weekend. So, okay, rewind. So I accidentally got HBO Max. I didn't mean to, but I have HBO Max now.
It's good. Ish.
No, it's shit because it can fuck itself because it's crap. So first of all, it got my hopes up because it had Doom Patrol on, and I'm like, ooh, it has the DC Universe stuff on it. That's nice. Nope, just Doom Patrol. Yep. No Swamp Thing, no Harley, just Doom Patrol, which fine, I'll watch Doom Patrol. I'll enjoy Doom Patrol, but it's annoying that I can't watch Harley Quinn or Swamp Thing. But whatever. Here's the fucking stupidity of goddamn HBO Max. So I'm looking for TV. I'm looking for movies that I already have memorized that I can just put on in the background while I'm ripping the walls out of my kitchen, because that's what I spent my whole week doing, is just remodeling two kitchens. So I put on Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Movie's amazing. It still has that one shot that completely ruins the film for me because it's so inexcusably bad and could have easily been fixed, but that's fine. And we go along and watch Alien. Alien's done. So then we switch to Aliens. So here's where we get to my complaint, and then an unrelated topic to my complaint. So we get to Aliens, and I'm like, I want to watch the director's cut. It's got the extra scene with her in the park learning about her daughter dying of old age. Yep. It's got the autocannon scene. It's got Newt's family finding the navigator ship. It's the superior cut of the film. So I look and I look and I search and I search, and I can't fucking find it. All they have is just Aliens. I'm like, son of a bitch. So we put on Aliens. I watch Aliens. It's ending. The credits are rolling. The little pop-up on the bottom of the screen comes up, and it says special features for this movie. And one of the special features is the goddamn director's cut.
Oh, yeah.
Why have that fucking listed as a special feature that I have to play the movie to then access the special feature of the different movie?
Yeah, you see, this is one of the things.
Alien 3 was the same way. I had to start Alien 3, pause it, scroll to special features to watch the assembly cut.
Yeah, I hate DVDs in general because this was the era when everybody was excited about multimedia technology, and so instead of just having a fucking video or a fucking film on a disc that you plugged in and hit play, you have to deal with a menu that you operate on a device that has play, pause, and stop buttons on it. Fuck everyone who thought having custom menus per DVDs was a good idea.
Well, and what about the DVDs who bragged about that as one of their special features? Interactive menus.
Fuck them in the ear.
But, like, this also, God, fucking...
I mean, at least... So, I'm looking at this from the other side here. Okay? At least they are available.
Sure.
They're not...
But it's just so dumb.
I will say, though, HBO Max's their menu system is the fucking worst as compared to like even HBO Go, which was nice. It's nicely labeled. Trying to find something on HBO Max sucks ass.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, I mean that I have that criticism for a lot of things. It's like you are a multi-billion-dollar company. You can hire some fucking UI engineers to make a competent user interface. It's like looking at the things like that was to me the biggest complaint of the Epic Game Store was that it's like it's a fucking web page. It's not this. There is no reason for the app to exist how
they
it is.
They didn't even have a cart. They didn't even have a shopping cart.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like the fuck. You guys have money. You can hire an engineer to do this.
Nintendo still doesn't have a shopping cart on the Switch. No, I can't buy two things on the Switch.
Nope, you can buy them separately.
But fucking HBO Max, not only that, I watched the Lord of the Rings series on it, which is how I ended up with it, and I didn't want it. I meant to just do the 1 week free trial, and then I forgot to cancel, so now I have HBO Max, whatever. But Return of the King has 47 minutes of credits, and so, like, a half hour into it, I came and I turned it off. So now, do you want to finish watching this movie? It's just stuck there until the end of time. I can't make that go away. If you're rewinding, so you like pause it and you go to rewind and it has the little like tiny picture in picture on the bottom that has like all the frames on either side. And when you rewind and fast forward, it doesn't change the one that's showing. So you don't get to see where you're rewinding or fast forwarding to.
That might be
the ones around it move. Oh. The ones around it move, but it doesn't.
Oh, mine does. It might be, a network thing or something. But yeah,
the less frustrating Aliens thing, and now I have to rewatch it again with the director's cut because I have to keep track, is that I'm going to sneeze. Hold on a second.
Into your elbow.
I muted it.
Oh.
Anyway, fuckity-doo. I think the Marines are they almost win. It has never occurred to me before. For the last 30 years, Aliens has been humanity desperately in terror, struggling on and fighting against overwhelming, undefeatable odds, mm-hmm. right? And barely escaping by the skin of their teeth. There are 158 colonists on that planet. Newt, the two who had facehuggers removed, brings you down to 155. In the initial discovery, they figure that there's about a 33% mortality rate in the fight, which means there's roughly 100 colonists left. When you factor in the final fight scene at the end with Hudson and Vasquez and everybody holding their own when they're inside the walls, and you factor in the autocannon scene and all of that shit, man, they probably kill 80 to 90 aliens. I doubt there were more. There was probably down to single digit by the end.
Yeah, there wasn't. If you look at the sequence with the queen there was not many.
Like that was probably all that was left. Yeah. Like I've always assumed there were functionally infinite aliens, but rewatching it this time, I'm like, holy shit, man! Like if Gorman wasn't completely incompetent, the Marines probably could have won with like zero casualties. Like it really wasn't a lopsided fight.
I still think the ambush would have taken on a lot of them.
Possibly. If they'd withdrawn instead of, like, when they realized they couldn't fire their ammunition underneath the reactor, if they'd withdrawn and thought about stuff and rearmed with flamethrowers and shotguns and stuff instead of having harsh language, you know, probably would have gone better. But even losing half the crew, they almost wipe out all the aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, because all the autocannon sequences is after that, too, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so I need to rewatch like it again and see if I can count how many aliens actually get killed and figure out how close they got. Which will be cold comfort to, you know, Hicks and Newt
who
get killed off before the opening credits in the next film.
Nathan, somebody else has already done that. Just Google it.
Maybe.
Somebody else has done how many aliens die in Aliens because that seems like a statistic.
There's just a personal satisfaction with doing something like that yourself.
I mean, if you Google it and it's not there, then you will have the power. But I think someone's already done it.
Yeah, one of the things I do in my spare time right now is write an Xbox controller driver for World of Warcraft. It's not that one doesn't exist. It's that, goddammit, I want to write one.
Yeah.
Okay, I found a spreadsheet.
You're still gonna watch Aliens anyway, but now you might be doing this to confirm the spreadsheet. So
yeah,
it was like I know, like, well, you know, Brian, it's kind of a cool story. I don't know if we've mentioned it on the podcast, but he was originally contacted back when he was the webmaster for Friday13th.com. So Brian Giese was originally the webmaster for Friday13th.com. He was contacted by Joe Bob Briggs for Monster Vision to get him the totals from the killings from the Friday 13th films. In fact, I was there when Brian was doing the count for it. So I watched all, at the time, I think it was 9 Friday 13th films, all in fast forward to stop to count how this kid died, by what, in what part of the film. So, yeah, I remember that distinctly, of watching all of them in fast forward into very gruesome death sequences.
This guy's spreadsheet says that the Xenos were down to 24.7 at the time of the reactor explosion. That's assuming 6 in the initial ambush were killed, 1 dies in the crash dropship, 50 to the sentry guns, 5 in the final room of the last stand, 4 to Gorman and Vasquez's suicide, and an additional 5 to Ripley in her final, entry.
Where does the 0.7 come from?
Listen, they start with 82.5. Let's see, that's still 5, that's 5.5. Yeah, so when it has 50 dying to the sentry guns, the surviving ones goes from 77.5 to 37.7. So when he wrote 50, he instead removed 39.8.
Hmm.
So
Well, I mean, there's
question the veracity of the spreadsheet.
Does he take into account the Marines that were taken alive and infected?
Sure. So we need to add three, probably only two. There wasn't enough time for Hudson, but we do need to add for Diedrich and Apone.
And Wisperski.
Wisperski is not taken.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Wisperski dies, I believe. Because no, Hudson says that I think it's just Apone and Diedrich are still alive.
Oh, I suppose we can pause it at the camera sequences to see who's actually alive. Wisperski, he just runs off, and you just hear somebody yell Wisperski, and then you just hear a scream in the background. That's all you really
have. Him. Well, I believe because he's one of the two that get killed when the ammo pouch that's carried by Frost explodes.
No,
because Diedrich is. Yeah, because Diedrich is taken by an alien, and as she's being grabbed, she sprays her flamethrower, which gets Frost. Frost drops his ammo crate, the bag, and Wisperski is not the one who looks over, because Hicks pulls back.
I think Wisperski is the first I think Wisperski is the first one to... I don't think he's in the fire.
He's not in the fire. No. Because the explosion just shockwave kills two. Because there's not Wisperski. Somebody else is looking down the stairwell, and they get blown backwards, and their neck breaks. I'll find them here.
All right, you mean to jump to the next question?
Sure.
Oh, I'm moving the wrong mouse again. It's awesome. Oh, stunning announcement just happened. Actually, 17 minutes ago. The committee has come to the decision to cancel Warfare Weekend for 2020.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean,
it's basically inevitable. I'm glad that
it was going to happen.
Yeah, I'm glad that they took care of that now, so that way we don't have to canceled messages or travel plans and such. Hopefully that they'll be able to take whatever funding they had from that previously and put that into 2021. So. And it looks like it's still going to be in the same place for 2021. So, yeah.
Crow is the other one who's in the explosion. But I'm trying to find Wisperski here.
Yeah. He just disappears down the tunnel. I mean, like, he's... All you hear is somebody yell out Wisperski, and you just hear him screaming in the background. And I think you see his camera go blank in the film. Like from Gorman's point of view, where he's looking at the
camera. You actually see very little of Wisperski, which is why there is actually a website called Where's Wisperski that was devoted to seeing where you can see Wisperski.
You just hear his name just called out. Wisperski!
Yeah, nope, that's what it is. The ammo explosion, he's the one that Hicks is pulling away from the fire. Then the explosion goes off and throws Hicks and Crow and Wisperski. Hicks survives the blast. Crow is killed by the blast. When Hicks leaves to go check on Crow, Wisperski is attacked by a xenomorph.
Yeah.
So he could have been carried away, but I don't believe he's one that... Because when Hudson says... He says Sarge and Diedrich are alive, and he might then say, Sarge, you know, we have to go back for Sarge. I don't remember. But I know that Sarge and Diedrich are the ones that are called out as being alive initially by Hudson.
Yeah. Well, maybe Hudson doesn't care about Wisperski. I mean, some people in your platoon, you just don't, you know, like, he's a slacker. I don't want to deal with him.
This person agreeing with me, they always thought the character's name was Bowski, and everybody was just wondering where he was.
Where's Bowski?
Yeah, where's Bowski? Because that's the main line you remember is, where's Bowski? Where's Bowski?
Well, the thing is, I remember, because it's all military thing, you know everybody by their last name. That's what's on your uniforms.
Yeah, my brother and his wife just call each other Hoffman.
Well, that's sad, though. So, yeah, I just saw that posted on there for Warfare Weekend.
It's unfortunate, but it's for the best.
Yep. So, all games...
I cannot in good faith... what's the word I'm looking for? Encourage, you know, gatherings of large people. It'd be hypocritical of me with my full-on belief that COVID is a real thing and people are dying.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like that all games and points this year will be counted towards the 2021 Invitational. So they're going to have like a lot of scores to double up for that 2021 Invitational, which is cool. So next.
Yeah, I hope we can have one in 2021.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They're talking about like antibodies not lasting very long as well in current states.
Well, things are looking really grim right now, just because of we have hit another period of exponential growth, and we don't seem to have any capability at just about any governmental level to do anything about it. There are only a handful of states that have actually managed it, and there are so many people that have decided that not wearing a fucking mask is a personality trait.
Yeah, I mean, there's
inconvenience is not oppression. Like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're talking about the United States here. We're not talking about other countries, which
seem
to have been able to handle this. I mean, like, one of the densest populations in the world, being Japan, has got four digits of deaths. I mean,
and they had fewer cases than Florida did over this weekend.
Yep. Yeah. It's
people insane. Mistake freedom with irresponsibility.
Yeah.
It's a free country doesn't mean you can do literally anything you want, and anyone who ever tries to sell you otherwise is trampling on your Gadsden fucking flag.
Yes.
Don't set a crowded movie theater on fire. Don't set off a nuclear bomb in the middle of a school district, right? Like, there's fucking things you don't do. Freedom isn't infinite. Wear a goddamn mask, you self-centered children.
And I would also like to point out that for all the people saying that mask orders are unconstitutional, we fucking decided this. The Supreme Court, during the 1918 influenza pandemic, decided that yes, the governors have the ability to tell people to fucking wear masks. Yeah. I mean, it turns out a weird way our law works. The president doesn't have that authority, but the governors do, and it is not against the Constitution to do so. It is not against. You do not have a right to go out in public and endanger everyone else.
Same thing happened with seatbelts as well. You can get a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. I mean,
you have a much greater argument about being forced to wear a seatbelt. I mean, I can understand. I mean, I can wrap my brain around the danger you are posing mostly to yourself. Yes, I can wrap my brain around that argument. The automotive argument is driving while intoxicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The comparison, I should say. I mean, I see morons driving their motorcycles because this is Wisconsin, and because Harley Davidson is the next town over, we have a lot of people on motorcycles, and because Wisconsin is populated by humans, there are a lot of morons here, and so I see them driving their motorcycles down the road without wearing a helmet, and I'm like, if you're not going to take any greater steps to protect your brain, I guess,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen what a small little rock will do to your windshield in your car? Can you imagine that hitting your head?
Have you seen? Yeah. Like,
but I mean,
bullets are a thing. Like, a rock can go real fast and it's real small. Like, we've been murdering people with real fast, real small things since we were monkeys.
Yeah. But I understand that argument, and I'm look at somebody and say, I mean, I can understand why somebody would object to helmet laws and would say, well, this is my decision. Sure, whatever.
If masks worked in such a way where they only protected the person who was wearing them from breathing in stuff, and they did nothing for transmission, then it would be the same as a helmet law, where it's your choice.
Yeah.
But you're endangering other people by not wearing it.
Yes, I mean, actually, based on the statistics we have for COVID, wearing a mask is not. Wearing a mask is not a huge protection for you. It is a big protection for everyone else.
I got so annoyed because I saw somebody badmouthing like a chart talking about how good the masks are, and they had like, you know, wearing a mask, not wearing a cloth mask, wearing a surgical mask, whatever. And there was very like the graphs looked relatively close, and they're like, yeah, there's a difference, but it's barely any difference at all. See, but what they didn't mention was that the fucking graphs they were showing were logarithmic.
What's that mean?
It means that being that much bigger means that you're this much bigger because it's not a strictly one to one. It's like the Richter scale.
Okay.
Was that logarithmic or are the effect on RT? Because RT is the rate of transmission, and masks drop it down from 3 to 1.2, and the difference between 3 and 1.2 is literally about 80 million people being infected.
No, it was talking about the percentage of they had people cough on petri dishes, and it was stuff that was on there, but the graph was logarithmic because people forget it's like the Richter scale, like you have each one you go up is 10 times stronger than the previous one. So a two to a three isn't just half again as strong; it's 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And it's that same situation.
Yeah, decibels work the same way.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was in that scale. And so it looked like it was just a little bit more, but it was fucking five times the transmission rate.
But yeah, it's...
And that's why I hate HBO Max.
But yeah, just fucking wear a mask. I mean, this is not...
You're a petulant child. You're a goddamn when you're in the Walmart complaining about having to wear masks because your freedoms. To me, you're the same as a 2-year-old shitting their pants and screaming because mommy won't give them a fucking cookie. I have no respect for you. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening and you're one of those people and you're offended, go fuck yourself. I hate you.
Yeah. I mean,
zappity.
Grumble. So catch up on pineapple.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
What? Oh, is this the one about food combinations?
Nope. Just Terrence Mott asked ketchup on pineapple. Discuss.
Terrence,
I reject the question. Next,
I would try it.
That's I support about pineapple most... on pizza, and pizza has red sauce.
Yeah, I would try it. I would at least try it. That's about as far as I would go.
I refuse to acknowledge that this is a legitimate question.
Okay. And then somebody on the podcast who could have been on the podcast, who should have been on the podcast, who's always ducking the podcast, says that everyone has an opinion about some food combos, like pineapple and Canadian bacon, ketchup and Kraft mac and cheese, and eggs and bacon. What is your most underrated food combination you actually like?
I will say this may not be this is something I discovered kind of by accident, but ranch dressing mix on eggs.
I can see that. I mean, ranch. We're honkies. We like ranch dressing on anything. ranch dressing is our ketchup.
Yeah, I mean this is the upper Midwest. I have sent pictures of people of restaurants here that have the little condiment machine for ranch dressing, because in other parts of the country they don't do that. Yeah. But at the same time, one time I was fixing myself an omelet because omelets are amazing regardless of what Nathan thinks he believes. That I added ranch dressing mix to it, and it made it even more amazing.
Well, to be fair, it's only ranch dressing if it comes from the Hidden Valley. Otherwise, it's sparkling mayonnaise. So Raylene puts maple syrup on her mac and cheese, which is abhorrent, and it's a testament to how much better she is than me in every other way that I haven't left her over it. But the combo I like, so number one, and this isn't a weird one, but it's one that a lot of people don't know about, is if you're going to eat yourself some nice, like simple vanilla ice cream, drizzle some olive oil on there. Olive oil, yes, Andy. A little drizzle of olive oil on that vanilla ice cream makes it pop so good. Mm-mm. Yes, yes, it is 100%. Like, that is what the classy people eat. Like, at the $1,000 a plate, like, tiny portion, like, MasterChef things, they drizzle olive oil, extra virgin olive oil on your ice cream. It's goddamn amazing.
I'm a big fan of my Trailer Park vanilla.
If you got olive oil in your house, try just a little drizzle on one spoonful. It'll blow your socks off. Similarly, any creamy thing like...
To, I am trying to decide if this is a legitimate, if this was a legitimate recommendation, or we're going to go back and say we did that and that was terrible, and Nathan's just going to laugh at us because I, can I Google honestly it can't before. Tell.
You can Google it, but olive oil on ice cream is a thing. Similarly, the one that I do, and I don't do that a lot just because it's kind of, when I eat ice cream, I'm too lazy. I'll just fucking eat some ice cream. I don't even have the time to go to the pantry for the olive oil. But
the autocomplete is pretty awesome so far. It's basically, sorry, I'm interrupting. Olive oil on face, hair, skin, steak, ice cream, eyelashes, breast.
Okay, then. Vanilla ice cream with olive oil and sea salt. Yum, yum, yum. But a little cracked black pepper on like your cottage cheese or anything like that really makes it pop out.
Yes.
But the weirder combination that I enjoy, that again is something that if you Google it, it's not actually that weird. Actually, I'll throw in two southern things. Number one, Cool Lickles. Yum, yum, Cool Lickles.
You have mentioned this before. I have discussed that with my wife, who is also from the South, and we are not fucking aware that this exists.
Oh, whatever. You're crazy. Yum, Cool Lickles. But Cool Lickles is a thing, not a flavor combination. So to go with the flavor combination, I'm going to go with the good old peanut butter, pickle, and mayonnaise sandwich. Yum.
I'm shaking my head no.
Give it a go.
No.
Well, the pickle and peanut butter sandwich is a thing, and then just a little bit of mayonnaise is what makes it pop the extra for me. But the pickle and peanut butter sandwich is a fairly common food. Just slices of bread and butter pickles, slather on some mayonnaise. I put a little bit of mayo, or I'm sorry, slather on the peanut butter. I do just a hint of mayo, very thin layer, thin, yum. And then sucking all down, good stuff. Cool Lickle on the side.
When I was in the Army, I used to get, for my burgers at the mess hall, I used to get mayo on them. That was interesting. I think my flavor combination, you were talking about your wife puts maple syrup onto mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese, yeah. Yeah.
That with maple syrup onto corn flakes is actually really good. It's also probably
like instead of milk.
No, not instead of milk. With milk, you just kind of put a little on it on, with cornflakes.
You put sugar on your cornflakes, so I guess maple syrup's kind of like that.
It's just flavored. Also, I'm addicted to sugar too. So,
the Delta region of Mississippi is where the Cool Lickle is from. I just looked it up.
I mean, that's,
looked it up, David.
That's where my father's from, and I've never heard of it.
Well, did you ask your father?
I will ask my father if he's ever heard of it.
All right. He'll say,
But I mean, literally, the Southern Delta is where my father's from.
I found a recipe of a place in Albuquerque that has deep fried Cool Lickles as one of their appetizers.
I just want to know who told you these things were things Southerners ate and what they managed to sell you as a result of it.
A international superstar culinary giant from the South.
Told me
on national television.
Was this Foghorn Leghorn?
It was not Foghorn Leghorn.
I say.
I have seen him do that kind of a character. Where is he from originally? He was born in Los Angeles, California. But except he went to the University of Georgia.
Okay, it was Foghorn Leghorn.
It wasn't Foghorn. It was Alton Brown.
Ah.
All right. Zappity.
Rumble.
Michael Stubbs asks, is it just me or do your listeners appear to have mad cow disease?
What?
Remember mad cow disease? Yeah. Oh man, back in the days when that's what we had to worry about.
Yeah, when everybody was terrified of bovine spongiform encephalitis because it just sounds better that way.
Yeah. No, it could just be you.
My dad came out. I'll ask him.
I love Stubbs. I haven't talked to Stubbs in a while. I'm sad that I can't visit him at conventions anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, once there are conventions again, you'll be able to do so.
It's probably going to be a couple of years before I really start going to conventions again. or the second the first one comes out, I'll go.
Yeah, yeah, that is the more likely thing.
Yeah. I mean, you'd always have to worry about Concord in the first place. I'll just add a little COVID to that.
Right. Yeah. We'll have a vaccine by then, and we will actually do that. I have to go get my physical anyway, because my age ends in a zero now, so I'm due to get injected, inspected, rejected, and neglected.
Yeah, I haven't done that. I should have.
I should, yeah. Mm.
Okay, right. I just talked to my father who is from that part of Mississippi, and he's never heard of it. So
I don't know that your father's actually from Mississippi. I think that you're living a lie.
I don't believe.
I think that you're from Vermont, and you just didn't know it.
All right.
Yeah. So I continue to be doubtful, especially the attribution of the Delta.
What about peanut butter and pickle sandwiches?
I've never heard of that either.
Oh, what is wrong with you? You Vermonters.
Dude, I mean, let me tell you how food, if you're a poor Mississippian, works. You take cheap cuts of meat and you drown it in cayenne pepper. And then you deep fry, something to go with it. And that's Southern cuisine in a nutshell.
It sounds like awful like a Wisconsin cuisine as well.
But without the cayenne pepper.
Double mayo.
Yeah.
Mayo,
this is, as my wife calls Northern Wisconsin, the land of the bland.
She's never been to a nice fish boil.
All right, Zappity.
Sure you betcha.
which Marvel movie is best as a standalone movie from a storytelling perspective?
Toss up between Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain America, the First Avenger.
I think Cap's... A lot of the origin stories, like Iron Man by itself, is a pretty encapsulating story.
I mean, Iron Man as a standalone movie was fine, but I didn't think it was as good as either Guardians of the Galaxy or Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you definitely have to be looking at the first in a series, right? Although some of the laters in the series, like Ragnarok, almost stands on its own, but obviously you still need the backstory. You need the you're right. Hulk's what kind of throws it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about Ragnarok because it is just such a great movie. But yeah, the backstory between Thor and Hulk, you're missing out as a standalone.
Thor and Hulk, Thor and Loki as well. I mean, there's like
what about Age of Ultron?
You need a lot more backstory for that movie.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, Avengers was also requires the back end.
One of my coworkers wanted to get caught up for Infinity War and Endgame, and so she decided she didn't have time to watch all of the Marvel movies. She'd seen none of them, right? So it wasn't just like a recap; it was like from scratch. So she's like, "I can't watch all of these MCU movies. I don't have enough time. So I'm just going to watch the Avengers movies. Those will be the big like tentpole ones." And it kind of actually almost worked, except the fact that the third Avengers movie doesn't have Avengers in the title because it's called Captain America 3 Civil War.
Yeah.
And that's really an event. So the issue was when she skipped that one.
Yeah.
So she did Avengers, and Avengers by itself is fine. And then Age of Ultron works by itself pretty well too, because it builds off of the first one.
Yeah.
And then she jumped to Infinity War.
Yeah.
So none of the fallout between any of them, none of it.
There's like so many things. Like you almost need to watch Black Panther before Infinity War.
I mean,
if you're doing it minimalist, you start with Captain America, the First Avenger, and then maybe Iron Man, and then Avengers, and then you, I mean, you can do Age of Ultron after Avengers, but
you really want to get in pretty much before the second.
Do you though?
I think the
thing is Ant-Man has to introduce himself. Like if you watched Civil War, it's kind of enough. Just like you don't need the first Thor if you watch the first Avengers film, because Thor has to introduce himself to Iron Man and Captain America in that little fight scene. And so as a viewer, you get that introduction.
And that's a total comic book introduction, too. It's like, we're going to fight. And then, No, you're good enough to be on the team.
Black Panther, if you haven't watched it, okay. But if you had watched Civil War, you would have been introduced to him there. Yeah. And he's the king of Wakanda. He's got this magic suit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you'd be amazed how, if it weren't for missing Civil War, she almost could have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, the Guardians would be the most confusing part, because it's just all of a sudden there's people in space.
Well, that, and yeah, that, and you're missing Captain Marvel.
Yeah, and?
Yeah.
Because, again, she's introduced within the film to the other characters. They're studying the beeper. She shows up. She's like, you know, she's a friend of Nick Fury's. And that's the important stuff.
Yeah.
You don't need her backstory. You just need, here's a friend of Nick Fury's who he sent a signal to. And now she's going to leave the movie because the writers don't know how to handle her.
Which is weird, because everything that's normally on everybody when they got dusted disappeared. Like, all their clothes, everything. So why did the beepers stay? It would make more sense of, like, if he threw it to the ground or something before he dusted, but he dusted as he was holding it.
No, contrary to most other people, Fury seemed to recognize what was happening. So.
Well, Spider-Man did, too.
Yeah.
Good times.
I don't feel so good.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I think Guardians.
Peter Parker canonically has superhuman sense of perception. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, can you imagine what that actually felt to him, yeah, though? Is his body being torn apart like that?
Ugh. Yeah.
Also, it's canonical that Thanos did half of all life, not just half of sentient life, which means that his entire plan made no goddamn sense. Because in addition to killing half the people, he also killed half their food supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what? You big purple sociopath?
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah. I know they explained it that they wouldn't have done it in the shows, but doing it to impress Death would have still been, I think, a good motivation, too.
If he was just a printer-carrying incel nice guy?
Well, I mean, that's honestly how he was in the comic, is he was just like, he wants Death's attention.
Yeah.
But he's, yeah, I guess this day and age, that would probably not work out very well.
Yeah, whereas
instead, after that, his goal wasn't to woo Death; it was to become Purple Shrek.
Yeah, Shrek.
Yeah,
the ogre.
Yeah, that was it. It's like he had his little farm and his scarecrow. It looked like he wanted to be Shrek. He just wanted his little swamp where people left him alone. Oh. After all of that, he's Purple Shrek.
Purple Shrek. I heard he wanted to become Her Bull Shrek. And I'm like, what the fuck is a Bull Shrek? And why does Death need one? I was so confused when... Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to impress Death. He wants to become Her Bull Shrek. What the fuck is that? Purple Shrek makes perfect sense. I apologize for my confusion.
So I say...
I thought it was a sex thing.
I say Captain America First Avenger, I think, is probably... the one that I would gravitate to if I have to show somebody just one single storylined movie from the Marvel Cinematic.
I would go between that and Guardians of the Galaxy, but would lean towards First Avenger because it's more representative. It's more representative of the greater story.
Right, but if the point is to have a standalone one, Guardians is the one that stands on its own the most in my eyes.
Sure,
you think? I mean. Is it more accessible? I think Captain America is more accessible to the uninitiated than, you know, a random talking raccoon.
Well, except
World War II super soldier.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, but no, you talk about uninitiated. Nobody was initiated to the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, that's the point of it. And that's what made that movie so fucking amazing, was it was almost like they were just challenging themselves. Because you know, yes, there's going to be one or two really insane people out there, like some moron who really likes Drax the Destroyer and has like an action figure of his in his house. What, Andy? What?
I don't have a Drax the Destroyer. I was very upset when he wasn't wearing all purple and green.
I thought you had a Drax action figure.
I do.
But you do, yeah. But the point is, like, obviously the extreme to say nobody, but, you know, whatever. Nobody gave a fuck about the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, even enough. The people who like the Guardians of the Galaxy, it was like some joke tertiary book tier. Like, I'll talk about loving, you know, Section 8 and thinking Dogwelder's a cool character, but it's not like I have every issue and actually, like, it's just like a little side gag thing in the back. And so to take that and say, fuck you, we're making a movie with a talking tree and this is what's happening now, it's fucking amazing. It's inaccessible, but it was inaccessible even to the target audience.
I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, that was the. I mean, that was the statement at the time, that it's like shortly before Guardians of the Galaxy came out. DC said that they hadn't planned a Wonder Woman movie yet because they didn't think the audience was ready for a female led movie. And then Marvel's like, "Fuck it, talking raccoon, let's go."
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And thinking about it now is like Star Wars. It's just basically a sci-fi film in a sense.
Yep.
It's like Star Wars. I mean, who would have believed that, you know, a giant talking rug. You know,
and it's a farm boy traveling the galaxy with a wizard and a talking dog. Like, like, this is what you have. Fuck it.
Yep. Okay. Do we have anything else on there? Yeah, that's pretty much it for our Zappity Grumbles that I saw. Nathan's got 5 million recommendations.
We already went over Dresden. I don't remember. Psych 2, Lassie Come Home, comes out tomorrow as we're recording this. Comes out Wednesday the 15th, so whatever.
Psych 2, from the USA TV show?
Yeah, the second feature-length spinoff of it comes out tomorrow as we are recording this on NBC's streaming service, The Peacock, because everybody has a fucking streaming service. Eat my balls.
Streaming service that should, like, somebody in the boardroom should have said we should not call this The Peacock.
Oh my lord.
Somebody. I don't care who said it.
And so we already talked about Dresden, so then I have an ironic and an unironic one. So the ironic one is Artemis Fowl, the movie. We all have Disney Plus because we all got it to watch The Mandalorian. So you can watch Artemis Fowl, and it's the worst goddamn thing ever. It is just a pile of incompetence that is fascinating to watch.
How did you watch the trailer of that and then decide that you're going to watch that film?
I didn't. I watched hours worth of people tearing it to shreds and then decided I was going to watch it.
Okay.
Like, for example... I'll give you an example of just raw incompetence of this. Is that the main driving force within the film, as far as character-wise, with the main character, Artemis Fowl, is that he has an absentee father. And he misses him. He's never there. He loves his father, but he's always gone on missions or whatever. I miss my dad. Dad's never home. Dad's never home. So he explains this, and then he goes home from school. This is the first time we see him go home, and his dad's there.
Mm-hmm.
So you just told us the whole driving force is that his dad's never home, but his dad's home the first time we go to his home. Then the first puzzle that the main character solves, he's able to solve because he remembers the lyrics to the nursery rhyme that his dad sings to him every night before he goes to bed. His absentee dad, who's never home. Like, how are you that incompetent at story writing to take your central character arc and undermine it twice in the first 10 minutes of your film?
How did...
It's astoundingly bad. Or even without,
like, a message of like, yeah, this is before Dad went missing. Or no, that's just... Wow.
It's astoundingly terrible. Josh Gad eats his way into the house by burrowing through the ground and pooping out dirt because that's how things work. And he burrows through the ground into the house and he comes out on the second floor. Like, just in a wall. How did you get on the second floor while you were burrowing through and again, shooting dirt out of his anus? This is something they make sure to show us in explicit. I mean, not explicit. You don't see the puckered starfish. But as he's eating the dirt, they zoom in on his butt and dirt's just flying out of his butt.
These are
things you want in your film. It is astoundingly terrible. It's not even like there's one or two things that redeem it. Like, I'm not even saying it is a dissection of a failure. If you want to see just out and out incompetence in film version, there's few better examples. It's like Cats. It's like that level of just gross incompetence.
They were going to release that in the theaters.
They've been trying to release in theaters for the last decade, and it's never worked. And then they finally just shit it out onto Disney Plus. And they're lucky that the COVID happened, because they would have lost $100 million. So having the excuse of not needing box office receipts has saved them, because it wouldn't have made any money in the box office anyway. And at least this way, they don't have to admit it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, because they don't have to release the numbers.
Yeah, so again, I'm not encouraging watching it as an entertaining film. I'm encouraging watching it as a dissection of a deformed, you know, like when scientists discover an animal that cannot survive, so they have to cut it up to figure out what went wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what this is for.
Interesting.
Also, Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2.
Yeah, I don't have that yet. I need to get it.
You should. All the Bloodstained games are good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So my movie recommendation, I don't know if this is going to be disagreed upon by the crew here, but I got done watching, I saw on my like HBO that Unbreakable was on. And so I rewatched Unbreakable, and man, that is a really solid film.
Holds up.
Yeah.
And then I watched, immediately after that, I didn't watch Split, but I immediately watched Glass. And I've heard a lot of complaints about it, but I actually kind of liked it. I did watch it in the background because I was doing work at the same time, so I may have not paid attention to every single stupid detail. But overall, I felt the film was good. Not like, I would say maybe a B- film, but overall it entertained me, and I like the idea of that, the twist that happens in it. If you haven't seen it, I like that twist a lot, and I liked overall basically the characters that were in it, with both Glass and.
I'm thinking that you probably enhanced your enjoyment by not paying a lot of attention to it, because I did not hate it, but my biggest objection was that I felt that it took 15 minutes to give you 2 minutes worth of information. And so the whole film was like, here's just stuff and stuff and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I got it. I got it. Please proceed, film. And so like, that probably for you is just like, blah, blah, blah. Oh yeah, I got that. And then the next thing kind of happened.
Yeah, it did go over a lot of things continuously, just ad nauseum. It makes me want to see Split now. I was very
Split is better than Glass. I liked Split a lot. I might have even liked Split more than Unbreakable, but I don't know.
Yeah, I like the idea of, you know, in a sense these characters are superheroes and not really superheroes, but they have something special about them. Like the first couple times when Beast rages out is just, it's a very cool transformation. The guy, James McAvoy is fucking amazing.
He's good in general. I like McAvoy.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, I, you know, I finally saw Glass and I didn't think it was as bad as what everybody else said it was. I think it worked fairly well is to watch it back to back with Unbreakable though. I think that probably helped enhance it a little bit.
I don't know how you skipped Split, though, man.
It wasn't in the timeline. They actually showed Unbreakable and then Glass.
Who did?
I think it was HBO or whatever.
Just autoplay is like coming up next.
Yep, next it was. No, I didn't. It wasn't watching it on streaming. I was just watching it on HBO.
Oh, gotcha. That's kind of weird that they would just skip Split.
I mean, technically, it's not really necessary. because they really go over the character introduction of him in in the film.
One of the neatest things about Split is that as you're watching it, you don't realize it's the second part of a trilogy. And so that it's literally like the end credit stinger is like, oh, by the way, this actually takes place in this universe.
Yeah. Where they have the, what is this character's name? It's not the Watcher. It's
David.
Yeah. It's David something. They don't really call him by that. They only call him by that nickname a couple times.
Oh well, yeah. No, it's not bad. It was a very polarizing film. You know, it had its issues, but it wasn't terrible. I wish
poo-poo on you. I wish it would have did better in the box office because, well, I mean, can't really say much more about it without giving it away. But yeah, I wish it did better in the box office.
Fair.
Yep. All right, David.
It did better than Artemis Fowl.
Well, yeah, you have to show up at the box office. I think Cats probably did better than Artemis Fowl did in the box office.
Yeah,
it did.
Oh, I was upset that, like, on the one hand, obviously we shouldn't have gone anyway, even if you could. But in the most recent half in the bag, they discussed a couple streaming movies, and one of the things they're talking about is like if you look at the top grossing films from this year, it's stuff that came out last year because nothing this year has come out, and even where theaters are open, they're not getting films. So like within the top 10 highest grossing films of this year is stuff like Beetlejuice or whatever, because these theaters are just randomly throwing whatever shit they have on the screen because they don't have access to anything. And so one of the things they showed was like that Fury Road is back in being like the top of the box office. And on the one hand, I don't want to go to a theater because I don't want to die. And even if I'm not going to die, I don't want to go to theater because I don't want to encourage these places to be open. Correct. Right. But on the other hand, I would fucking love to see Fury Road in the theater again.
Yeah. I'd like to go see the black and white version in a theater. I think that would be really good.
So, I, again, will not have much in the way of recommendations because I have been so fucking busy and staying at home all the time. And so I'm just going to recommend the Little Caesars zesty Italian cheese bread.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Which on initial read does not sound terribly good because it's basically a Detroit style pizza.
Yeah, don't you dare say bad because it's Little Caesars. Because
I say it doesn't sound that good to start with. And honestly, in terms of quality per dollar spent, you can't do better than Little Caesars. I mean, honestly, their deep dish Detroit style pizza is very good and it's cheap.
Here's the thing. And I'll let you go back to the specifics of like the Italian zesty. I just want to, because I've said that too a lot. Like dollar for dollar, Little Caesars is the best pizza. Get whatever.
Yeah.
Honestly, fuck dollar for dollar. Of the like chain restaurants that are, you know, like I'm talking just Domino's, Pizza Hut, Little Caesars, Papa John's. Mm-hmm. Fuck dollar for dollar. Little Caesars is flat out the best of all of them.
I will agree with that for their Detroit style. Their round pizzas I do not think are as good as the others, but their Detroit style is the best chain pizza you can get.
Their crazy bread, I fucking love their crazy bread. The zesty Italian cheese bread.
Is that the Italian cheese bread is good.
Is that the stuffed bread?
No, that's one of the new things, which is also good. But honestly, I don't think it's as good as normal crazy bread.
The zesty Italian cheese bread is almost more like pokey sticks, Andy, where it's like the solid slab of bread that they slice into the stick form, but with cheese and zesty Italian seasoning on it. And I just came.
Oh, no.
That's the Italian cheese bread. The zesty is the Italian cheese bread, except there is a jalapeno sauce added to it.
Yes,
which does not initially sound good, but my fucking God, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
sorry.
There's no visual to this podcast.
Yeah. And it's $5, so get some and try it. And at Little Caesars, you can order stuff on the app and go in and pick it up out of their machine, and they have contactless pickups. And the stores around here, at least, all mandate mask use. So contrary to a lot of other places doing food, they are doing it the right way. So
the little individual storage containers when you go to pick it up is just insane. And yeah. They had those even before the COVID.
Yeah.
But the ordering ahead of time, and not even have to talk to the person at the counter and say, hey, that's mine in the hot box behind you. You just walk up, punch in your code, and your pizza shoots out of a little locker. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is really good fast food. It is really cheap, and as I said, the business is handling the pandemic the way they should be. So get some fucking Little Caesars.
Yeah,
and wear a mask when you're doing it, because they won't let you in the door, which is what they're fucking supposed to.
Correct. Yeah, our Little Caesars has a drive-through, so you can just literally drive through it, which is awesome. Yeah.
So good.
Yep, I've really appreciated all of my fast food joints that are around us that are all drive-through.
Oh, yeah.
I found this out this weekend, and this is not a recommendation, but it's still Popeyes, and Popeyes is always a recommendation. I found that... And a couple people I've talked to, Popeyes is forever got a line.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not just before the pandemic when everybody was trying to find a chicken sandwich. Just going there now for just normal food, you have to schedule a time that's off normal hours in order to actually get food in a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, I mean that is what happens when you have a popular fast food place that often doesn't do the fast thing terribly well because they have higher standards of food production than most other places.
Yeah.
So they always have a line. I mean that's unfortunate. I would go to Popeyes more frequently if it was faster, and also if they hadn't torn up completely fucking destroyed the road in front of the closest Popeyes to where I live.
Yeah.
Because we live in the north and there are only two seasons, winter and road construction.
Yeah, that Popeyes though, I mean, like Nathan, that line went all the way out into the gas station that's next to it. That's how long the line has been when I've gone there a couple of times. It was like, I got a hankering for Popeyes, and I drive past it, and I'm like, I have to hankering to find something else.
I have a hankering for Popeyes tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon after lunch. And before dinner. Well, it's. I think that's probably pretty much it, unless you guys have anything else.
Nope, I'm just watching another 11'8" video.
Word of advice for everybody out there: it'll be the name of this podcast, and if you don't like it, you can stop listening to us. Wear a goddamn mask.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Just if you're going out in public, wear a mask. If you're in your car by yourself, who gives two shits? But if you're in public around other people, wear a mask.
Keep,
it doesn't matter.
Keep it no in your glove box. Take it off while you're driving. Throw it in. Run into the Piggly Wiggly. Buy yourself some booze. Go back to your car. Take it off. You're not going to fucking suffocate. Yeah. Have some respect for your fellow human beings.
Yeah. All it takes is just like little things here and there.
It's the same reason I wear pants in public.
Yeah. Hey, take a lesson from the doctor who actually went to school instead of the your friend, your second cousin on Facebook. You know, come on.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, folks, for listening. We'll probably post something up next week or so.
Hooray.
Maybe. All right. Sounds good.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.